Welcome to
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Mile High Hockey Lab podcast. This is our 14th episode. We're so excited. Presented by Mile High Hockey, the SB Nation Colorado Avalanche blog. We're here to talk about the Colorado Avalanche. I am your host, Ezra Parter, joined by the crew, the writers for Mile High Hockey. It's not everybody, but a bunch of us. I've got our managing editor, Evan, here.
Sup.
Jackie K is here.
Hello.
And Adrian Hernandez.
Hello.
Who's also producing this episode while he's talking. Crazy.
Yeah.
multitasking at its finest.
That's right. That's the sports world is all juggling. Sports are just juggling. We got a great show for you all today. Thank you for being here. If you are here currently and you haven't already subscribed, don't hesitate. Just do it. By the end of the episode, you'll thank yourself for having already done it. You can share the episode with folks if you want to. That would help us out a ton. And definitely, if you're not listening on YouTube, do that. It helps us the most. If you're listening somewhere else, thank you for that. But also, you know, consider YouTube. It's the way to go. Then you can also see how comfortable I am spewing out all of this to start the episode. And you can see our fun, beautiful faces. We have a great episode today. Like I said, we're going to talk about the All-Star game that just happened. We're going to get into our live poll of the week, which is about what's going to happen with the Avalanche. And we're going to look around the NHL and at some of what's been going on so far at the trade deadline. And then, ahead of the trade deadline, I should say. Then we're going to preview tomorrow's game against the Penguins. But before we get into all that, how's everybody doing? I feel like I haven't seen you in a while. I missed last week.
Right? It feels like these weeks are like turning into like 2 week stints in my mind, especially when the All-Star game happens and there's no real hockey to kind of like.
Yeah, I definitely got out of my rhythm of like watching games every morning and taking some notes. It's just like a week off from hockey. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Well, it's fine because the Avs needed it, which I'm sure we can also probably go into that more. But
yeah,
man, I don't get asked about how I'm doing. I'm doing good, Ezra. Thank you for asking. I appreciate it.
Glad to hear it. How about you, Jackie? Doing well?
Yeah, hanging in there.
That doesn't sound convincing, Jackie.
Nah, I'm good.
Okay, good. Because I'm worried. I don't want to worry about you because I like you a lot. You should be good.
I'm good.
A woman of many words.
Yeah,
I'm just saving them.
There you go.
Saving them for hockey. I hear you. Well, then let's get into it. The All-Star festivities just happened. I know some of us watched, some of us didn't. I'm not saying which one I am, but I definitely did see the highlight of Cale Makar wiping out, blowing a tire, doing the fastest skater challenge. Yeah. And hitting those soft little pads over in the corner. Were y'all worried?
I didn't get that. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead, Jackie.
I was just gonna say for a split second you're just kinda like, but yeah. It is nice to put up the pads. I guess I was just like, I wanna know what his time is. I was just like, can he just not go again? Sorry,
that's silly. I agree.
Yeah, what does it hurt to let somebody go again? I don't know. I guess they'd be doing it all night if they let everybody go again. People would be saying
it was that or Makar wipes out again, and I don't know if either would be that great for Avs faithful. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch it live. I was doing things that night, and so then I like checked on my phone really quickly and like just tuned in really quickly while I could, and I was like, wait, Makar got 22 seconds? Like, what's that? did we get lied to? Like, is Makar like, is he actually human now? But
is he just a genie?
I didn't know. Yeah. So once I saw the replay, I was like, oh god, like out of all of the storylines this season with the Avs injuries, it would just have been typical if a player had gotten hurt at the All-Star weekend, like, and if him of all people, oh, but I'm glad that's not the case. I'm glad that is. Whew.
Yeah. They have the pads up there. Thank God. But you know, from the angle too, the first angle, like the live angle, cause I watched that from the jump and I was like, oh my God, he's not wearing a helmet. And it looked like the only thing that would possibly be vulnerable in the situation that he was in was like his head, because the pads were only what looked like a foot tall, maybe like a foot and a half tall. But then they showed the other angle and it's him with his tongue out and he's grinning from ear to ear. I'm like, all right, this dude is fine. We're cool.
Yeah, he's having fun with it. Yeah.
And Nate and Miko, of course, were giving it to him on the bench. Yeah. So
yeah. And speaking of Nate and Miko, the three of them kind of put on a show in the 3-on-3 tournament. It didn't end up going Central's way in the final, but they looked good on the stat sheet. I didn't watch, but they looked good on the stat sheet. It seemed like they had a great time. Did anybody actually watch that game?
I did. Yeah.
How did it look?
You know, it's funny because they did keep them together. So yeah. Like the three of them went out every single shift. And so it was really cool to see them together, but it's funny how it unfolded is that they played the first game against the Pacific and obviously beat them, and then sat for the second game. And then the third game, it really felt like an Avalanche third period. Like the team came out really slow and lethargic. They couldn't score a goal. Like it took 15 minutes for that team to score a goal. And it's like, this is the All-Star game. Like,
right. What is this?
How is it even possible that it takes you 15 minutes to score a goal? And then Miko scores the first one. Like, okay, just like the Avs, right? And then it went back and forth a little bit. And I think they pulled the goalie near the end or something. Mm-hmm. And then like McKinnon and Makar each got like a goal with 30 seconds left. And it's right. Like, this was like such an Avalanche third period. Like, I know who cares.
Guys get out to the slow starts then.
Yeah. Like, I know it's like, who cares who wins the All-Star game? But when, I don't know, once you're at that point, you're in the finals, it's just like, you know, they're competitive guys. Like, you still want to win.
Yeah. I'm interested in like finding a way to make that more competitive, because the balance, I think, between like, how competitive the goalies are and how competitive the players on the ice are is like pretty off balance, especially for an All-Star game. Like if they're going to loaf, like it should be loafing that turns into like 15 to 20 goals in every one of those games. You know what I mean? Like they're, yeah. And I'm not saying like goalies should loaf, but it's like ingrained in them to not do that ever, so that you can't really expect it. And then at the same time,
Hellebuck looked like he was pushing that limit.
Yeah, he was. I feel like he was playing the whole game, the whole time, pretty much. You know, give or take a few.
That's good. I like that.
But
I would watch the game if it was all that.
Exactly. But I think where it's missing is like there's nothing really to risk injury for the skaters themselves. Yeah. And so why would you do it? And I would just wonder if there's a way to make it matter. Kind of like, you know how the MLB, they use the All-Star, I don't know if they still do this, but they used to use the All-Star game between the AL and NL to decide who had home field advantage in the World Series. Oh, that's
right. I don't think they did that anymore. Yeah,
something like that, where like which one would get the advantage, maybe in the Cup Finals, like who gets home.
Right. That would be
something like that.
Just because then I feel like, you know, they'd have something to play for in unison as their division, you know, representing their division. And because it could even go that far, instead of just East and West, you could say like which division has, based on these playoff rankings, how you get home ice priority later in the later rounds, you know, then it gets even weirder. So I don't know.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah. An incentive would be nice. And I agree with you. Like nobody is expecting to see like real hard back checking or defense, but yeah, to go 15 minutes without a goal for your team, like that's what people want to see. And so it almost feels like sometimes they don't want to show the other guys up. And like, I get that, but like the point is for the fans and the kids to see the kind of skill that these guys have. Right. If they're trying like a super dangle or something, it's not to embarrass the other guy. It's just to showcase your skill. Like that's why you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think Makar in particular, like he was really trying not to like do anything that special.
I was gonna say, if anybody was gonna do something special, especially on defense, I thought it would have been Kale. Like he would have been like, "Oh no, I still don't want people to score on me." Like that's where I thought his head would be at. But back to your point, though, Adrian, I don't think the MLB does that anymore, unfortunately, which is sad. But also a random idea that just popped in my head while we were discussing that. What if the team who wins the tournament, so, you know, the Atlantic won it this year, and then whoever is the MVP of said team, or of like the All-Star team and like the team that they play for, right? So Kachuk won it and plays it for the Panthers, right?
Right.
What if the winner and the MVP of the All-Star game, their team then gets to host like the draft over the summer or
there
something?
There you go. That's not a bad idea. Yeah.
Something, I feel like they had already like decided that Kachuk was gonna win it when the Atlantic was in the finals, because like Larkin had a hat trick and like he scored the first goal but he didn't do anything else, and it was like, come on, you know, Larkin had the hat trick, and I forget, one other guy did really well, and it was like, it should have, oh, Pasternak, I think he had several goals, and it should have been between those two. So when they named it Kachuk, I was like, oh, come on. Like,
the home bias, yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. And like, and 80 I mean, of his family members were there, and it's just like, come on.
Yeah. They kept showing him in the box.
It
is kind of like about putting on a good show for the home fans, so I get that. But also, yeah, if we can't find a way to incentivize these players to play hard and put on a good show, then it's not going to be a good show.
It's not worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. But here's a pitch. Okay. The winning division guarantees that no team from their division will get the first overall draft pick.
Ooh. And we'd have like Cogliano's and these guys in the All-Star game.
Right.
Because they'd be like, who's down? No, because
the good teams don't want their
wear pucks.
the good teams don't want the bad teams in their division to be getting Connor Bedard. They'd be
the all-grit team because they would have rosters just full of guys who would block shots and be great on the kill.
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be like...
Spend the whole 3-on-3 plan, keep away.
Exactly.
Oh, just get involved, make it a defensive showcase. Yeah.
Jamie Benn,
that's exactly what the NHL wants.
Yeah. Well, should we get into our live poll there, Adrian?
Yeah.
All right, great. So our live poll today is a look at what's going to happen to the Avalanche. It's going to be on our Twitter right now. You'll be able to vote for what you think is going to happen. Question is, this year's Avalanche team will blank. The options are 1, go back-to-back, 2, win the West, 3, make the conference final, 4, win a playoff series, or 5, miss the playoffs. And if you choose miss the playoffs, you have to explain yourself.
Yes, exactly.
So let's start in here while Adrian's posting that. Evan, what do you think? What's your answer?
I mean, obviously the heart goes back to back, right? Mm-hmm. I actually wrote a piece about it this morning / late last night at like midnight, but that like the Avs are wanting to be back, and they have the belief to be back. I know McKinnon commented on it over the break, that you know, he really wants to go back to back, and his team wants to go back to back. I mean, that's kind of just been the mantra ever since September when they talked about it during preseason, during the media availability then. And you know, I don't think there's any reason they couldn't. They've got reinforcements coming, in case you missed it. Bowen Byram is back. He's playing against Pittsburgh tomorrow. He is back from his lower body injury. So is Val Nichushkin. He is back from his own upper body injury. Obviously, both of those guys are going to be key down the stretch here. It gives the Avs a lot more defensive depth. Byram will hopefully be able to you know, play some more minutes and, you know, get in. Obviously, he's going to start off rusty. He hasn't played since early November. It's been 3 months. So, you know, he's going to need some time. So don't expect him to fly out of the gate immediately. But if he does, hey, then great for us. But, you know, he'll need some minutes under his belt. And then, you know, he'll obviously progress later on in the season. Of course, Nichushkin, we've seen what he can do on the forecheck and, you know, being able to make the Avs play 60 minutes and play a 200-foot game. And the Avs are better with him in the lineup. So with those two alone, you know, it's already great. Manson's going on the trip, but he's not playing. It'll be 11 forward, 7 defensemen again, as they had been before the break, that Bednar will be rolling with. And then obviously Landeskog's about a month down the line, so there's no reason they couldn't. They just need things to go right still. They need guys like Manson and Landeskog to stay on track to get back healthy, and they also need, you know, knock on wood, players to not get hurt again, or not at least get hurt severely enough or as much in numbers, so that way then, you know, no disrespect, that we don't have to play Jean-Luc Foudy, you know, every night. So,
right.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I think realistically, I think they'll make the conference final. That's what I'll say. Well, I'll leave it at that for now.
Okay. All right.
Hope for more.
Make the conference final, hoping for more. Jackie, what do you think?
I think I'm going to go win a round. And I guess that doesn't necessarily mean they can't do more. But I feel like they've lost depth and they haven't really rebuilt that. I think it's going to take time for them to have a team as deep as they did last year. I think it took them 5 years to get to that point. And, I'm never going to count this core out. Like, who knows? Georgiev could get hot and Miko could score 15 goals. Kale could score 10. You never know. Like, I'm not going to take that completely off the table, but I just don't quite think this team is where it was. And I think it's going to take time to get back. But, and I think it's going to be tough. Like, they probably are going to play Dallas or Winnipeg. I do think they're going to make the playoffs. They're probably going to play Dallas or Winnipeg, and both of those have coaches that kind of know how to thwart the Avs. So
yeah.
It might be a tough, sneaky tough first-round matchup for them if it does shake out that way. So if they even won a round against one of those teams, I don't even think it would be, like, that disappointing, even though, of course, everyone wants them to win again. And I think they will eventually, but maybe just not this year.
Okay. Adrian, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I think Jackie has a lot of good things to say right there. Just in the fact that it's like, I interpret this poll two ways. Like, where do I want them to finish? Obviously, I want them to go back-to-back. I think they're capable. I just don't know how realistic that is of a goal based on the context of the season and how injuries have kind of gone. So I'm in the same boat. I'm not really ready to double down or, like, be, if I were a betting man, I'm not picking the Avs to win the Stanley Cup right now. Although the odds might be better now than they should be.
Yeah, they're even a safe they bet do
again, go back to back. Yeah, they're probably a safer bet now than they were last year, funny enough. But I just don't I'll find out a lot in March when they have 16 games and 31 calendar days. Basically, we're going to know if this team is for real in two ways, because the trade deadline will come and go. So we'll get a message from management as to whether and how they see the season, where they think the team is at. Because if you see them do the 2C thing, they're trying to strike while the iron is hot. If you see them do the, you know, depth forward stuff, they're, you know, trying to be a little better up the middle, but they're not willing to leverage the future. But then again, you know, if they do absolutely nothing and they try or even trade some players for future assets, that might be something where it's like, okay, what do they see that we don't? And then on top of that, like I said, the 16 games in 31 days, you're going to find out results wise just how serious this Avalanche team is in terms of being a contender again.
I also want to see if they can stay healthy for a month.
Yeah, for real.
Like, you know, it's going to be a difficult February in the schedule, and we've talked about that. And, of course, we want to see, like, can they beat some of these teams they need to beat? I also just want to see who can stay healthy for a month.
Yeah,
I think that's going to be a big factor in my good mind, point. Too, because if you get these guys back and they stay back, that's one thing. But then if you just start losing other guys, it's – you know, that's kind of the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
Who is it? Totally. Who is it that's been played all the game? Miko's played every game. Newhook has played every game.
O'Connor.
Is EJ?
EJ has.
Yeah. EJ played. I think it's just those four that have played all the games this year for the Avs. I saw with that stat somewhere pre All-Star break. So, I mean, yeah, I'm with Jackie on that point. You know. Get your players back. have them play for more than a month, please.
Well, I'll say that it's guaranteed they go back to back.
Well, then we'll all thank you for being right. Yeah. We will gladly be wrong, and we will be happy to say you were right. You believed, and we should all just listen to you.
That's right. No, I mean, my real answer, I do think it's definitely in the cards to go back to back. But it's one of those things that like very, very rarely happens in sports, right, and especially in hockey. So it's not something that anybody should be counting on. But if you look at the West, I agree with you that Dallas or Winnipeg could be a challenge, but I'm not really worried about the Pacific Division if they make it that far. I'm not worried about really anybody else. And then maybe that's naive. This is not the same team as last year that romped through the Western Conference side of the playoffs, but it's also mostly the same team, and those teams are mostly the same. So yeah. I don't know. I'm not too worried about the West side of the bracket. The East side of the bracket is really good. Mm-hmm. Beating Boston or Carolina or even Tampa again, it's not a guarantee. So it's hard to pick back to back. But I will say, I've been playing NHL 23, and I've won 10 straight cups. So I think it's possible. I think it's possible.
So you're saying there's a chance. Tell me how quickly and who did you trade immediately? Because that's always the question, right?
Manson's always my trade because his contract's just not very good. I love Manson.
See, everybody has that person that as soon as they take over the team, they're like, I'm getting rid of this guy.
What do you get back?
Honestly, I don't care.
No, it's like that.
Like, I like Josh Manson. He's a good player, and he's a good fit in the real world. But in the game, I just got to
figure out
if I'm going to be able to re-sign him.
Oh, my gosh. Also, you can add JT Compher to the list of every single of a player who's played every single game. I didn't realize that.
Of course.
I didn't realize Compher played all 48. I definitely thought he was missed at least one or two in the midst of all that chaos. But
I was wrong. Classic Compher fashion, he's undervalued.
I was going to say, I think we'll get to this later on in the show, but like, he's probably the guy that I think teams are going to go after pretty hard based on his status, because I think his next contract in his mind is probably going to be his best. And that still might be pretty competitive in the scope of what some of these teams who'd be interested have. So be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, definitely interesting conversation to talk about. But before we get there, still on this poll, before we see the results, obviously for players, it's always cup or bust. Do you think that the Avs front office is thinking that way? Or I mean, it seems pretty clear to me that there's a bit more of a long-term view in upper management. But yeah, that's the question that's on my sheet here. What do you think?
I would say no. I agree with you. It does seem like just the way that they've held on to their first round picks ever since Sackett took over. I don't like the cup or bust mantra anyway, because like, if you go all in, you're done, right? Like that. Mm-hmm. That's what all in means. It's like,
that's right,
you push the chips in and either you win it all, you're done. Like, you walk away from the table and your game's over. So we know that this isn't like the last hurrah or whatever. We know that this core is hopefully going to have at least, as long as Miko's here, like at least 3 more years. And if he re-signs, hopefully longer. So I don't think they should look at it that way. And just the way the season's unfolded, it's not like they're on track for a president's trophy run, another super run. So I don't know why you would go all in on this year. But yeah. I understand also the window doesn't last forever. But so I'm going to say no. If they could find a deal that also helps them down the road, like a Lehkonen kind of thing, which I think is going to be tough because they don't have the assets for that anymore. So they might have to get creative. They might have to trade a Compher to get picks and then flip those picks for an RFA they can keep around. You know, that's assuming a lot. That takes a lot of moves to execute that, so I'm not really expecting it. So I do think that they're going to maybe have a little bit quieter of a year. I think the Nieto deal was an indicator of what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And to get an NHL player and basically not really pay anything, I think is like, exactly, if they can pull those off, then they haven't used any of their assets. They've bolstered the team. I don't think anybody should be disappointed. if that's the route they go. So I kind of expect slash hope that, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it too. Evan, what do you think?
Yeah, pretty much ditto what Jackie said. I was going to mention that, you know, if there was any time where the Avs kind of went, you know, cup or bust was last year, with the movements of like Justin Barron and Drew Helison, you know, getting away and bringing in an Arturi Lehkonen and Andrew Cogliano, things like that. That was really, I think, the most active the Avs have been, honestly, probably at a trade deadline in a long time, because of that. So, you know, I'm pretty much with Jackie. I pretty much echo everything that she said. So, similarly, the Nieto move, I think, is one that kind of just exemplifies where the front office is with this moving forward. So, yeah, good job, Jackie.
I'll just, to keep the poker puns going, like, I'll double down on everything that they just said. I will say, I will say though that I'm cautiously, I don't know if I don't want to get roasted, but I'm honestly cautiously optimistic that management will take a step back and think about the fact that their window is as long as, honestly, some of these longer contracts like Makar. For the last few years, the scope has been the MacKinnon contract, right? And you're getting him at a huge discount. So now's the time. I was on the top of that hill. Now I'm feeling more like we have some of these guys that fit a team who's really trying to make a run, who is in that same sort of opportunity that we were in 3 years past. And we might be able to leverage a roster player into some serious draft capital and possibly prospect equity that we wouldn't really see if the Avs do decide to go for it again. And not only would we not see it like in the next 2 years, but like even more so into the future, because you're still going to have to leverage, you know, the next available top three picks if you really want something good. So I kind of do hope that they go with the contracts they have, maybe even offload someone to kind of fight back against the tide, because the window now is Makar's contract. And we'll see how his value changes over time, because we've seen other defenders get paid. And we'll see that again this year at the trade deadline. We'll start seeing some numbers, and then we're going to compare it to the Makar contract and go, honestly, that's pretty good. So that's just my two cents on the matter.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, go ahead, Jackie.
I was just going to say, yeah, he could be worth like $15 million by then. I mean, who knows? It depends what the cap is. It's
right.
It's hard to really guess, but like I said, I just want to say I feel like it's through Mikko's contract, which is three more years. Because I think they will try to keep him. I mean, he is definitely part of this core, but I just don't think it's set in stone. So like if they do keep him, then I agree with you. It's probably the length of Makar's deal before they have to pay him like 15 or whatever it is. But until they sign Mikko, I'm kind of thinking it's like that far, like the 3 years, and then we'll see.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. That makes sense. That makes more sense in terms of like next man up time wise, for sure.
And as far as like offloading somebody to make back assets, I think doing it in season feels like a swing I wouldn't take, because this team could still make noise, and that seems like it's punting on a season that there's still an opportunity. Like it could be the right move. It could ultimately, like, you move Comp for example, and it frees up Newhook to move up the lineup and step into that role. And we've seen how he's excelled in the third line role right now. So maybe he has another step that would help him take. But it also is stripping down a roster that's already a little bit bare. So it seems like that's probably not the move if I'm in charge. But what is the move, I think, is if Byram shows out and he shows that he's ready to be a number one defender who can stay healthy, or a number two defender, I should say, since Makar's on the team still. You can move Taves before when he has 1 year left on his deal for a big, big haul in the offseason, probably. Make up a ton of timing asset wise. Capital.
Gotcha.
And I think that's, if I'm sitting in the GM's office down at Ball Arena, which I assume the office is in the arena.
That's such an interesting point, because like how does a GM's move at the deadline affect the room? Like, because if you're a player, you want to feel like your GM's bringing in guys to like reinforce. And
yeah,
specifically,
well, that's why,
I feel like McKinnon would be like, what the hell?
yeah, you're just not going to take anyone off the roster and just accept futures. You would have to flip it for something.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's good.
So it would have to be like a Lehkonen move where you get the picks and then you go out and get an RFA like that that can come and step in. Because, right, you're not going to sell it to this group like, oh, hey, you know, we're really low on assets, so we decided to take some for now. Like, you definitely have to bring something in with them. But I also agree with Ezra that, like, Taze is probably the one that they really need to think about. Like, they've got to pretty much know now, are we going to give him that massive contract or not? Mm-hmm. And if they're hedging no, they really should think about it, because they could get a lot of pieces and be able to fill a lot of holes. Like, they moved 1 year of Barry and got Kadri. So it wouldn't be just to get draft picks and you know, punt it down a couple years. No, you could be getting something that's going to help immediately.
Right.
So I do hope they go that route. But it's up to them and what they've decided.
All right.
And then obviously, if Taze is willing to take a contract that fits, then you keep him because he's great. But
yeah, like, sure.
But yeah, good sounds point, like you were about to get the. Oh, go ahead, Adrian. Sorry.
No, yeah, but you're right. I'm about to give the poll results for
playoff
sure.
results.
Playoff results.
Yeah,
I got
please
the
let us know how it unfolds.
I was gonna say the NFL scripts are released. They're the NHL ones now too. Awesome. go tell them to fix 2019's one. Landeskog was onsides.
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That was they were supposed to omit that line and then they forgot to do it, man. But yeah. So the poll of the week, like Ezra read earlier, was this year's Avalanche team will blank. And then I put a little disclaimer that said, if you think they will miss the playoffs altogether, please explain yourself. The choices were go back-to-back, win the West, make the conference final, win a playoff series, and, of course, miss the playoffs altogether. The results are go back-to-back by 43%. Coincidentally, though, it goes go back-to-back, then all the way down to the least attractive option other than not miss altogether, win a playoff series at 21%. Then conference final at 19 and win the West at 17. So, I mean, I imagine that's because anybody who thinks they're going to win the West or make the conference final probably thinks they'll go back to back. Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And nobody voted for miss the playoffs, huh?
I haven't got a single comment. So I didn't put it on the option. I didn't have enough lines, unfortunately. So we're going to have to call Elon on that. Say, man, like, we can only do 4 question polls. Yeah. What is this?
2019. Yeah, come on, you need at least like six. Yeah. Is good.
Have you not watched hockey? Come on, Elon. Yeah, so I don't know. What do you think of that?
I think that makes sense. I mean, I think, yeah, obviously everybody wants to be optimistic and have a great time with this, and that's go back to back. And then if people are a little more hesitant about the team, then winning one playoff series is kind of the safe bet. So I think that makes sense that that's where the spread falls.
Yeah. I think so too, yeah.
Well, cool. Let's move on then to we've seen quite a few just a few trades happen so far in the in the NHL basically around the All-Star break, with starting with the Bo Horvat trade and then subsequent signature on the dotted line in the island to stay around for 8 years at $8.5 million. We saw Jason Megna's in Anaheim. We know about that. Jacob Megna got moved from being Eric Carlson's partner in San Jose over to the Seattle Kraken. And then in Washington, Dylan Strome and, oh man, Sonny Milano. There we go. I almost forgot his name. Dylan Strome and Sonny Milano both got extended for a little bit to stick around as Capitals. Anything in any of those deals that caught your eyes? We'll start with you, Jackie.
I guess it's always interesting when a team takes care of off-season business at this time of year. So it obviously makes sense with the deadline coming up that getting some cost certainty and some numbers into the future helps teams, but it's always interesting when you see it. I guess it's interesting that Milano was the, I think their waiver claim or something, and then gave him a 3-year deal. Stroman's sort of interesting that way too. He's bounced around a lot. So Washington does seem like the place that it's like a good landing spot for guys. We know Albie Cabell is there now. Better fit for him there than Toronto. So I guess it's always interesting when a team starts to take care of business.
Mm-hmm. Milano was on a 1-year prove-it deal in Washington. Not a waiver claim, but basically he was
okay.
Nobody signed him in the offseason, so he was he wasn't quite a PTO. He got a 1-year deal, but
I think he was on a PTO. I think in Calgary, maybe that's what I'm thinking. And then he signed. I think he signed after the season started. Yeah, there, something like that.
I was shocked that he didn't stick in Anaheim, and it does. I'm not surprised to see him stick in his next place, you know. Although it sounds like there may have been a stopover in Calgary in the middle, but yeah, he seemed like a talented. I mean, he had that weird thing with AJ Greer in the offseason when they got into like a bar fight or something, but he seems like a talented guy. You know, it makes sense that Washington's trying to get younger with him and Strom, because obviously Ovi's an elderly person. So, yeah. Evan, what about you? Anything stick out?
I was going to say the Strom contract is more what interests me. And somebody within the Avs.
We're all breaking.
Colorado Avalanche.
Gosh. Someone in the Avs Twitter realm had mentioned that the Strom contract, I want to say it was AJ, but I am not 100% certain.
Okay.
That was like, you know, it could be related to like Compher's next contract, which obviously is needed this summer. And that's a really good look. I mean, Strom's on, I believe it's 5-year, $5.5 million year. So, I mean, what's Compher's deal at now? Isn't it like four?
3.5?
Oh, 3.5?
Yeah, he's on.
Sorry, Strom is five years, $5 million per year. 25.
I was only $5 million.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a good comparable for his agent. I was looking at their career production, and both of them probably are going to have a career year at total points anyway. I'm not sure if Compher is going to beat his goal total, but they both have been living around the 30-ish range and probably will top out, let's say, at least probably 40 this year. So it's going to be a pretty straight-up comparable between the two. So I think it is a fair point. Like, it's probably going to take 5x5 to keep him. Mm-hmm. And I think you could even extrapolate that to Rodriguez. Like, it's probably going to take 5x5 for either, and they're going to have to choose.
Yeah, which guy's a part of your future? And you know what I mean? That's the question. Because, and with that being the question, that I come back still, though, to Compher at the deadline. Like, is he the kind of person, because you know, maybe you know, if you know now, right, that you're probably not going to afford Compher, and you've chosen Rodriguez, why keep him? Other than to play for a cup, right? But you're not going to pay him next year, so he's essentially a rental if you don't plan on keeping him. And then, you know, obviously, rental at $3.5 million, that's pretty good, but that's something you're going to have to decide. Like, are you ready to just watch him walk away? Or, and the same goes for Rodriguez. So it's really interesting for me. I think that the Avs have more options than people realize. You also mentioned like their back end having some possible equity in that Bowen Byram might be further along than we had predicted. And everyone's talked about Sammy G. I'm not going to do that today. I'm with you on the Taves train, because it's the same is true for him. If you're deciding he's not a part of the future, other than to keep him around to make a run to repeat, why is he, what are you going to do? You're just going to lose his value. Essentially what Lou Lamoriello did for us was give him away for nothing. Are we going to then pay it forward, I guess? So there's just kind of There's things
you can only lose so much. They let Kadri and Burakovsky walk away for nothing. Like, I get the own rental concept. You do kind of have to do that at some point to win a cup, but they did, and like, they're not generating assets. They haven't been really good at gathering extra picks. Like, everyone always says, look at Tampa, they get rid of their first, but they still have 10 pick draft classes.
Right.
Like, there's,
it comes other ways, right?
Yeah, the other teams, you know, don't have a draft class where you have a sixth and a seventh round pick. Like, there, other teams have more assets. So I think that's something that the Avs have to be very conscious about, is they're going to have to do something at some point. I mean, they haven't shown that they can get anything out of their development system still. So that's
what I was going to bring up, because yes, they don't have that many draft picks, but also like, they weren't doing anything with them anyway. So I feel like trading them for roster players has been a better way to go than trying to develop people. And they keep their first because those players, they hit on a higher percentage of them. Whereas Tampa is like, no, we'll get rid of our firsts and then we're going to hit on our fourths and fifths. And that's a cool, if you can pull that off, great. But I don't even think they're pulling that off either, because they end up trading those guys for roster players too, like with Kachuk and what's his name? The guy that they sent to Chicago. The two guys they sent to Chicago for Brandon Hagel. I mean, it's man, I'm really annoyed. I can't remember his name, but it's coming. It's coming. First name's T. First name starts with a T. This is so boring. This is good podcasting.
I'm trying to think. They got rid of so many. I know there's Tyler Johnson. Was it Radish? I know there was two Radish, young guys.
Taylor Radish.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I think he and Kachuk are both higher end picks anyway. But still, I don't know. I don't really have a problem with the own rental thing, because like, what you gain by letting those guys walk away is cap space, which you can use to sign people who play those roles. So it's not that big of a loss, really. Like, I feel like hockey somehow has become hockey's like the only sport where if you lose somebody for nothing, is the term for letting somebody go into free agency, which are two very different things. Because you are gaining something. You're gaining a roster spot, you're gaining cap room.
But the other thing is, they don't like signing guys in UFA, like, because they're just too expensive. They're like, the last guy they really gave a big contract was like Donskoy, and then, you know, they had to get rid of him. Or it was like Soderberg when they had to give him a 5-year deal. Like, they just they don't really like free agency either, because you're not getting a deal there. And you really have to give term in free agency, and the Avs do not like to give term. So that's why they've done all these things, like, and it's great you can get Rodriguez on like a 1-year deal, but then you got to pay up, like
premium.
So they can get a few of those around. It's just like, yeah, they're gonna have a lot of roster holes, but how are they gonna fill them? And that's why the whole development system thing matters, because you need cheap to be able to come in and fill some of those roles. And I really have liked the trades for like Taze and Lekkonen, and that is a smart use of like second round picks, because they're never going to get their second round picks on the team, but like, the well is dry. They're already out to 2025. And it's like,
those are the picks on the table now, those 2025 picks. Like the real ones.
And then you start getting into like the present value of money, and those picks are devalued if you move them now, because every other team out there is going to be able to beat that deal. And I see them running. They're running into an issue here, because they're not going to want to overterm anybody in UFA. They really can't make those deals that they've had, at least for a couple years, until they really start getting their picks back, if they can make them. They're not developing anyone. The guy that was the closest, they got rid of for nothing. And so it is. It's like, where are we going to fill the holes this year coming up? Well, and so that's my long-term concern.
Same. And my thing with the Taves, back to the Taves situation in regards to that, is like, what are you going to pay Taves? Like, Seth Jones is making $9.5 million in Chicago. Darnell Nurse is making $9.925 million in Edmonton, you know? So it's like, Dougie Hamilton, $9 million. Kale just got $9 million. Petrangelo, where do you put him? Because in terms of production, he's a top 20 guy. So you're going to have to pay him, I mean, at minimum, and this would be minimum, like $7 million, probably.
Probably. So, I know there's hope. There is hope out there, like Uygar. I think his comp isn't outrageous, and he's not a number one D. I think that's the other thing is going to be the argument, is he's not the number one D on this team. And you look at like Jones and all the other guys you mentioned, like, they are the number one D.
Right.
But I agree. Like, you've got to at least be looking at like 7-8, and plus, if the cap goes up, that's only going to make it go up.
I feel like he's a guy who could stay here, get paid to be a number two, or hit free agency and try to get paid to be a number one. And he probably does get paid. So to an extent, it comes down to what he wants. If he wants to try that out, he's going to get paid, I think. And if he doesn't want to try that out and he wants to be Cale's partner for the long term, he can choose to take less and do that. But I don't know if he'll, I still don't know if he'll fit at that number. So,
right.
Because less for him shouldn't be anything less than 7 million. Less for him should be around 7, 8. More for him is like that 9. I can't imagine him getting 10, but yeah.
He might from somebody who's
exactly.
Then when you hit the open market, that's what it comes down to, is like if he's there to get as much money as he can, he'll get an offer in that area.
It'll yeah, just speaking of we are a team like Florida needs, if they can offload Bobrovsky somehow, they need to fill that defense core, because it is why they are bad. That's interesting. But our next question here.
This is why we're not GMs. This is why we're not GMs.
It's much easier to speculate than actually have to figure this out.
Well, they have a lot of info we don't have either, though. I mean, right. If we knew what some of their internal decisions already were, I think we'd be a lot better at making educated guesses, let's just say.
For sure. That's for sure. Well, speaking of educated guesses, who do you think the Avalanche should target in a trade, if anyone? I'm going to speak on this really quick, because I was trying to come up with an article where I was looking at how in the past the Avalanche have acquired people who are very good, like players who are getting less than ideal minutes for their value. That they're producing, guys who like Burakovsky are great on the rush, great at breaking into the zone, or defensemen who are great at stopping break-ins, great at blue line protection. And I was looking around the league for some of those guys, and I couldn't really find any. So I didn't come up with a great list to make an article out of. Guys who are underpaid, undervalued, and great at those couple of things that the Avalanche typically value. So I don't know. I wanted to find more. Give me guys to write this article on. Yeah.
There you go.
That's funny, because I was also thinking of maybe doing one, but I'll let you take the reins on it. It's like a brainstorm session
right here.
Yeah, for real.
Because I mean, we've heard the big names of like a Sean Monahan. Who else has been linked with?
Yeah, Taze, Timo Meier, which is like definitely not going to happen.
That's not happening.
Honestly, all three of those, I don't think there's a.
Patrick Kane's probably off the board, because it's. I thought I saw a tweet from David Pagnotta. I don't remember who. One of the Nailed main it. NHL.
The yeah. fourth period guy.
Fourth period. There he is. He'd said the Rangers and the Stars, so you'd probably take Kane off of that list. And I know we'd also talked about it last week to an extent. And I'd mentioned that the Avs would probably go for like a more depth player, like someone on the third or fourth line. Mm-hmm. Who was it from the Coyotes that we talked about? Was it
Bjugstad? I think
Bjugstad is Bjugstad. Yeah. Nick Bjugstad. I think I'd thrown out Schmaltz in there, but I don't know how likely that would be.
Good player. That's a tough one to get.
I said Derek Brassard, and Jackie was like, "Absolutely not."
so watch
molasses.
That's another guy that can't stay healthy.
Yeah, for real.
I like Sam Bennett out of Florida, depending on how Florida fares over the next couple of weeks. Because one, he's a Cortex client, which I don't know if you've noticed. The Avalanche, or in particular Nathan MacKinnon, likes to recommend that the Avalanche go trade and sign guys who are represented by Cortex and who work out in that same off-season group, because he has Rodriguez, Kadri, Cogliano, Newhook. Like, literally, it's like 7 Avalanche players and then like 20 other guys from the league. And these, most of them are dudes we acquired that weren't already Avs. They're just new Avs. So I honestly feel like they look there because the way that they train suits the way that the Avs are structured. Like, if you remember last year before they got Cogliano, they even mentioned, and MacKinnon even said, you know, I knew Cogs from our offseason workouts, and I told management to go get him. And they did. And I was stoked. And then the rest is history. He's the guy who gives the speech that they all kind of like call back to that says it got him going into game six. So there's like Batherson's a Cortex guy, like, which I don't know. He's young.
He's not
probably available. A part of their future in Ottawa.
Yeah. I don't think Bennett's available either, really, but yeah. Maybe.
But that's my thing is Florida's, like you talked about Bobrovsky's contract, they're in a weird position too, where they're going to have to decide whether or not the moves that they made make them an actual competitor, or if they're going to have to start offloading and making another crack at it. I know, obviously, the moves they made and the signings they made just this offseason fly in the face of that. But if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And the NHL is like a quicker league in terms of that than any other.
Yeah, and in a way, the move that they made going from getting rid of Huberto and Weegaard to bring in Tkachuk is getting younger. So, you know, in a way that it could be true that they're looking to do that. But he does have three this year and then two more years on his deal at $4.45 million. Bennett does, I should say. So, I don't know. It's a tough target for me because I don't see how they fit that money in. But you're still looking at moving out Compher, I know. So,
the more we've had this conversation, I think the move is to keep Compher, pay him, because you stay strong up the middle. Hope that new hook continues to develop because he started to show that again. Because you're gonna need that grinder 4C anyway. You can typically get him as a rental veteran guy. Heading into the postseason, knowing or trade deadline, knowing what you know about your team, and then leveraging a guy like Taves, because I do think he's going to be paid more than he's worth, no matter what, even if he stays, just based on who his partner is. And I think it's time to let Kale just be the guy who has someone under his wing, instead of Kale having, you know, Taves. People always say, well, what would he be without Taves as his partner his whole career? Well, yeah. I'm willing to wager he'll still be pretty good.
Yeah, I think we saw that with Ryan Graves. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, like Barry, too. I mean, everyone thought, like, Barry was this kind of top-tier guy when he left the Avs, and he really hasn't been that guy. And I know Graves has been pretty good in New Jersey, but Kale definitely got that guy $10 million.
Exactly. And we don't want to be the ones. I don't want the Avs to be the ones to pay him, to be honest with you. And I think he's also shown a little bit of, and I don't want to be like, I'm not taking personal shots here, but his game has seemed a little more complacent this season than it was the last two. And like habits turn into behavior. And, like, behavior becomes who you are as a player. And I feel like I'm not liking some of the habits I see from him. So maybe now's the time to get while the getting's good in terms of him, I guess.
Yeah, there could be some truth to that. For me, a target that I would go for this year, just to bring one person in maybe, is like a Sam Lafferty from Chicago, somebody who just is a true bottom-of-the-lineup guy who brings speed and grit and I feel like he could be a good fit for pretty cheap, but I didn't look too far past Chicago. I'm sure there's more guys out there.
Well, it's like we talked about earlier. It's pretty much if they got to come for free. That's where the Avs are at right now. It's only going to work if they come for free.
Sorry, I cut ahead of you there, Adrian. I was just,
okay.
How old is Sam Lafferty? I'm trying to remember.
He's old. He's like 31.
Oh, really?
Ready? I was going to say like 28. I don't know. I'll look.
I was going to say if he's like maybe like
27 years old.
Oh,
okay. Okay.
I was going to say if he's like 25 to 28, I feel like Chicago might want him in their future plans, but
I don't know. They got rid of Kirby Doc, man. They're getting rid of everybody.
That's like Kirby Doc. Oh, man. Well, and obviously he maybe doesn't fit the abs cuz he's kind of, I don't know, awkward. But
well, Makar sent him off, so, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, maybe he can go to the Makar School of Skating and figure some shit out. I don't know.
Well, I'll give a little spoiler.
I had to throw that in there.
Well, hey, good for him. I wasn't too sure about him, but good for him in Montreal. It's like some guys just fit better elsewhere. I don't know if he would have fit the Avs great. I think you found a good situation for him. But I was going to mention, I'm going to give a little spoiler. I'm going to make an article on the Avs trade deadline bingo card. I've actually already made the bingo card.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to see how many get checked off the board when they do make their deadline trades.
Perfect.
So, and sort of getting into what you were talking about, Adrian, one of the squares is actually played with Crosby, which I think is getting into that little McKinnon. And, oh, and another one was trains with McKinnon. Made this board too, so I'm not making any changes. So I think you're on the right track there, where they're getting a little bit of influence from that. But yeah, I also think like cheap veteran Lafferty makes sense. I'm kind of interested in what happens with St. Louis, because they actually have a lot of cheap depth players, and for them it probably is smart to pull the plug on this year, because they could make so many trades, and it goes beyond just O'Reilly and Tarasenko. That, like, I don't know really how to say his name, Nolichari or something. I think he even scored against the Avs. Someone like him, I think they would love to have. That brings a little bit of grit in the bottom six. I personally like Barbashev, even though he's the one that hurt Girard last year. But I I've always liked him. Like, back to his draft year, I just think he's like a good bottom six player. He scored 60 points last year. Not that you'd ever expect that again, but it means like he does bring offense. And I think he's somebody that they could extend and keep around and sort of make sort of like a Lekkonen deal, even though he is on an expiring contract as UFA. So that'd probably be my target. But I think for just a roster in general, I think the Blues are going to have a lot of players like that that could make sense. Now it's like, are they going to trade with the Avs? That's the other thing is, you know, they probably would hate to do that, but you know, if they're truly going to commit to just fire sailing all of these guys, then they just need to move them. So when you're looking at the bottom of the roster guys, can they be biased like that and not trade with the Avs? So that's why I also think like the O'Reilly thing's not going to happen, because A, they're not going to take a discount from the Avs to get O'Reilly. But when you're talking about like Nolichari, you know, do they really care? Are they, can they just take our this year's fifth? That is another square on the bingo card. The 2023 fifth, you know, will they just take that and move on? So we'll see.
I think the thing too with St. Louis is that they could have done this in 2019 when they were bottom of the Western Conference, and then Jordan Binnington saved them, and that was the only time he saved them ever. And won the Stanley Cup. So I don't, I don't know. Exactly. I would like to think St. Louis would be sellers at the deadline, but I don't. I still feel like they'd be like, oh, we can compete. Jordan Binnington will lead the way. No.
It felt like that. Like, I felt like I didn't want to write them off, but it they really have to just kind of do that this year.
They do, but will they? I don't know.
Yeah. GM's been dodging water bottles all week.
Oh, my gosh.
Sorry, I'm just terrible today. I can't help myself.
I think they're going to pull the plug at this point. Losing that last game to the Avs was just like, they had to have that one.
But. And I think Tarasenko and his quotes as of late tell you everything you need to know, at least about his situation there, because he said, I think in the All-Star game, he said, Vladdy doesn't know where Vladdy's going to go. So that's a pretty good quote, though. That's going in the sports quotes Hall of Fame, if you ask me. But just moreover on kind of some of the people, the teams you've talked about, it feels like every year the Avs and the Canadians make a trade that really favors the Avs. and then it also feels like that's a common theme with the Red Wings, that the Red Wings fleece somebody every year, at least in the last couple years. So we'll see how that goes. I have my eye on the Avs making a deal that no one expects, because that's always how it goes. It's always something that we're like, what? And then it always, or at least the last few, have worked. So I'm optimistic.
We could say
if you
that
want to get
about
surprised by a Montreal deal, Evgeny Dadonov's all right there waiting to move around the way. That would be insane. I'm not pitching that for real.
If the Avs get Evgeny Dadonov, that would be, I mean, masterclass by Chris McFarland. That's for sure. That'd be impressive.
I mean, those Canadian GMs, they're very particular about specific players, and sometimes they'll do whatever it takes to get like one guy and think that it's the next move. So we'll see.
Can't wait.
Canadian
for
teams
Matthews
are more old school.
Right.
I think they kind of have to abide by more, you know, code or whatever you want to call it. Unwritten rules up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess so.
Like trade your goalie when you request it. Your face.
Good way to make that full circle.
Yeah.
Perfectly done. Yes. Speaking of making it full circle, at the beginning of the show, I said we would talk about the game tomorrow against Pittsburgh, and now we're going to do that. We start on the road to coming back from the All-Star break against the Penguins. How do y'all feel about them coming out of this All-Star break, hitting the ground strong or shaky game in Pittsburgh? What are you thinking?
I'm a little terrified because of what happened after Christmas. Mm. And that was a 3-day break. This one was three times as long. I also think that they know that this is a really important stretch, and they can take the returns of Byram and Nuke and use that to galvanize them. So I'm kind of in both camps. I'm a little bit worried because their starts all haven't been great, but if there's any time to come out of the gates hot, it's now. So we'll see.
Yeah. I have to agree with that. Evan, what do you think?
Yeah, I didn't even think about the Christmas break when, whew, don't remind me of that Arizona. We did after the Christmas break. So, and obviously this team is at least not as injured as they were when they played Arizona after the break. And the returns of Byram and Nichushkin are obviously big, as I mentioned earlier. So I hope they get out of the gate running, and I think that'll be the case. I think kind of the most interesting thing I'll be watching is how Byram does, seeing how he gets on for the first time in 3 months. Val, I'm not so worried about, but Byram's the one I think the majority of the fan base is going to be watching.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think he'll be pretty good. Like the first game, maybe a little rusty, but he's got young legs. He's going to be pretty good. Yep.
That's right. Adrian, what about you? You worried about tomorrow?
I'm only worried about coming out on the road against the Penguins and the Tampa Bay Lightning, like back-to-back, not back-to-back days, but in back-to-back games.
Yeah, the first
just
two
because
games
like
back, yeah.
Those teams in particular have a reputation of being like really professional on the end of things like this. And like, you know, we've already alluded to the Avs, at least this season, haven't looked so good after a break. I do wonder though, if this one shapes up differently just based on the fact that, like we've mentioned, guys are coming back from the break, which I think can be a component that really allows the mental reset in the mind of some of the guys who've been playing without these dudes on the roster, like a lot more than they did in the early part. It's like, oh, thank goodness. Particularly, I'm thinking of Eric Johnson. He's probably like, yeah, baby, my vacation just started. That's kind of the thing. I think it has the potential to be kind of a shaky start, but it also has the potential to be, we start to see the Avalanche roster the way it was really designed to be employed. I don't know. That's just kind of my take. What do you think, Ez?
Well, I think I'm mostly just excited to see Byram back on the ice. Like Evan was saying, I think like I'm almost not really worried about the results. Just because the team is going to have Byram back in the fold. It's going to have Nichushkin back in the fold. It's not really a new look. It's not really adjusting to anything dramatic, but I'm more concerned to see like that some of the effort concerns that we had prior to the break with the third periods looking shaky to start. And then obviously prior to the Avs managing to win a couple games, there were some real effort concerns, especially in Chicago and some other games in the last month. So I'm more concerned about seeing everybody seeming to be pulling in the same direction for an entire 60 minutes than I am about the actual results against Pittsburgh and Tampa. Because, like we've said, Pittsburgh and Tampa are good teams. They're, losing to Eastern contenders is not as bad as losing to like Chicago and Arizona. Yeah, so, you know, point. I think that's where I'm at with it. But I'm also, I expect a win in Pittsburgh, to be perfectly frank. I expect that to be a win. And then Tampa is going to be a bit more of a challenge. Obviously, they were the opponents last year in the Stanley Cup final. I didn't really see that final getting too heated in terms of like, you know, like players truly hating on each other or anything. But do you think there's any animosity left over from being opponents in the finals for those two teams? Anything, are we worried about any cheap shots out there in Tampa?
No, I'm not worried. I mean, it'll be a good game.
Let me interject though, just to, because I feel like people forget this, and I don't know, maybe the take is where I'll understand the context for people, but not a lot of people remember Pat Maroon taking a very, very hefty swipe at Josh Manson when the Avs score the game-winning goal in Game 6, and it was on a play where none other than Pierre Belmar really was asking for a hook. To me, it looked like he grabbed it with his arm and then lost his edge and was actually going for a little bit of gamesmanship that kind of blew up in his face. But with that said, just giving that little tidbit, does that change your mind even a little bit, Evan?
I forgot about that. I don't think so. If Manson was playing, I think there may be, like, maybe Manson would like get a chirp in or two, or maybe a hit in or two. But with Manson out, I don't think that there's really going to be any purpose behind it. Yeah, McDermott could go for Maroon if he really wanted to, but you know, I think Bednar will try and have him play a little bit smarter than that. So,
and I don't necessarily mean like a drop it and center ice and take off the lids, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's like more to this game than there ever has been in a game between the Avalanche and the Tampa Bay Lightning outside of the Stanley Cup final.
That I'll agree with you with.
Yeah, that one I will. Yeah, because I mean, I think it's just like the Tampa Bay Lightning are still a measuring stick. You know, they are the Avs may be the defending Cup champions, but Tampa won back to back. Tampa's an incredible team.
Exactly,
and it would be crazy not to take them seriously and put a little extra into that matchup. So, as far as animosity goes, no, but like an extra level to the game, I think so. I think it's going to be a really good game.
Yeah,
Jackie, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think they've seen each other enough. I feel like a rivalry needs to build over time. So if they had played Tampa in like 3 straight cup finals or something, then you'd really feel it. Gotcha. But like other than those 6 games they played, it wasn't really, there's never really been anything between those teams. So, but I agree with that. Like it probably is a little bit more than a regular season game, but I do think the team's going to focus more on, they have like Winnipeg and Minnesota and Calgary coming up. I think those might get a little bit more heated, but it's funny you bring up the anecdote about Pat Maroon. And I remember last year in the regular season, and it was fairly early in the season when Byram like on purpose tripped him after a whistle and he like lost his mind. He was so upset like the whole rest of the game. It was just like Byram stuck a stick there and he just like fell over after the whistle. He was so mad.
Bo being Bo.
So, yeah, just those little things that I think maybe people don't quite remember about what Byram does. So it is funny that you bring up another incident with Maroon. So maybe that guy is going to look to be a little chippy.
I get a vibe from Byram that he's like the class clown. Like he just like does the funny young kid stuff in the room all the time. That's the vibe I get from Byram.
I believe it. Yeah. Well, we're coming up on the end of our time here, but before we get to sign-offs, do y'all have any bold predictions for the week? Adrian, we'll start with you since you're top of my screen.
Yeah, I wrote the script and totally forgot about my bold prediction. But now that I'm on
the
spot.
Man, I picked you because I figured you wrote this script, yeah, so you're probably
exactly
ready
that
for
was,
it.
You thought that that was a safe bet. How dare you? But no, I think I can come up with one on the fly. I got one.
I'll buy you.
Okay,
yeah, go ahead, Jack.
Scary.
Give me some time. I'm like the guy at the dinner at the table with the menu still in his hand.
It's got to be a Byron Bold prediction, right? So I think he's going to score a goal.
Nice. Okay. Starting out high.
All right, I'll piggyback it. I think Byron assists a Nichushkin goal, and we get the double whammy.
And those both happen in the same game?
Sure, why not?
Well, then they definitely would win. If both of those things happen in one game, I would 100% say they win.
Yeah. And you know what? I'll say Byram fights Pat Maroon.
No, I don't think he can fight.
I really don't want that. I really don't.
That's a bad pull prediction. I don't think anyone wants that one.
Well, just giving him a Gordie Howe hat trick. That's all. Evan, what about you?
I was gonna say I was gonna go on the Byron train with everyone going on the Byron train. I'll go with my second one. And then it doesn't involve Bo and Byron. Evan Rodriguez, 2 goals against his former team.
I love it.
Like it.
Yeah, awesome.
He played with Sidney Crosby.
He sure did.
And now here's
another
with
one.
Nathan McKinnon.
Does Miko finally get a hat trick? Like, he came so close.
Oh, my God.
Like, every game I go to, he would get, like, 2. I'm like, I just want to see a hat trick. Come on.
If it happens, it would be 2 in the first period.
Yeah. If it happens, I think it would be against Florida. I don't think it would be against the Lightning or the Penguins. I think it would be against the Panthers on Saturday.
You got to get Bobrovsky in net if you're going to get a hat trick.
True. That might happen.
The Bobrovsky slander continues.
A very good goalie, a very overpaid player. Yes. But that's it for today, y'all. Thank you for tuning into the Mile High Hockey Lab. We are going live on Mondays every week now. Mondays at 3:30 Mountain. Mark it on your calendars. Be on YouTube. Be on Twitter. Follow us. Pay attention to us. Love us. We'll be here for you. Definitely leave comments. If you say something interesting, maybe we'll read it. If you say something we don't like, you won't know. Nobody will know. So just say stuff.
We'll read it and blast you.
We'll read it, but we won't tell anyone. and keep an eye out on milehighhockey.com. We got plenty of good stuff coming your way. Game threads for chatting while you're watching the game. And that's it for us. Thanks, y'all. Go Avs.
Mile High Hockey Lab.